evening, everyone. I'm Bill, and I'm an alcoholic. And it's truly by God's grace I haven't found it necessary to take a drink since December 7, 1988. I'm as grateful as I know how to be for that today. And thank you, Mike, again for the invite. My sponsor had been trying to get me to come here for years, and he found one heck of a way to hook me. It wasn't that I was avoiding you. I was kind of busy, and he did mention I was in service, and some of you know and some of you don't. I had about 6-year period there where I was up to here in area service, including alternate delegate and delegate to the General Service Conference, and I really had to focus on that. Fortunately, at the end of 2008, I officially achieved has-been status, and I've been enjoying every minute of it ever since. I mean, it's not like they still keep me busy at the area, and I'm grateful for that, but a lot of it has slowed down. I'm very grateful for that. I've really had a great time this weekend. I enjoyed Gunther's talk last night, and was really moved by David's talk tonight. I know I'm doing the traditions, but boy, he struck a chord. Not all of his crazy drunk stories. I did a lot of that stuff too, but I was one of those that came in was a single father with 3 daughters, and I started that journey 4 years before I sobered up. And God, sitting there listening to that stuff was just absolutely heart-wrenching sometimes. I was in a position where I was in real good shape financially at one point, and there at the end it was just me and them, and it was extremely gut-wrenching looking at them day in and day out. And they were 2, 4, and 9 years old whenever I got custody of them, and by the time I got to AA they were 6, 8, and 13. And when I walked into the Meadowbrook group in Fort Worth, became a member of that group as a newcomer, one of the things I'll never forget, and this is, I think, very apropos to this being a man-to-man conference and with AAs and Al-Anons in here. My group had an Al-Anon group at the time. We had a back room, an extra room in the place, and they had Al-Anon there for many, many years. And my group wouldn't let me use the fact that I was a single dad with kids as an excuse not to come to meetings. My sponsor wouldn't let me do it. The group wouldn't do it. And the thing I'll never forget as long as I live is that every time I'd show up there with those kids in tow, somebody was waiting back there, and a lady was always waiting back there, be it an AA member or one of the Al-Anons. And I know I've shared that with you guys about the debt of gratitude that I have to Al-Anon. I don't go to Al-Anon. I'm married to an alcoholic. We're up to our eyeballs in AA. We get ready. Next week we'll celebrate, and I do mean celebrate, 15 years of marriage. And that's after 2 failed marriages drinking. I've now been married longer to her than I was the other 2 combined. But the debt of gratitude I owe to those people, because that gave the folks in that group time to do for me what needed to be done, and that is to show me how to recover from this seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, get me into the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous so that I can learn to live sober one day at a time. To get me to that point where I have recovered and I'm given the power to help others, and I began the process of working with others, and I've found every way imaginable to mess up this program along the way, but I've never given up, and I've got a passion for Alcoholics Anonymous today. Sometimes, I mean, I get called Nazi and all these other names, and that's okay. I can live with that. But I'm dead serious about the program. And see, I had to recover first. I had to have this recovery first in order to move on to what was next in Alcoholics Anonymous. The 12 steps prevented me from committing suicide. The 12 traditions were next in line for me to help keep me from committing homicide on some folks. The 12 traditions taught me how to live with you inside of Alcoholics Anonymous, and the cool thing about them is later on they came in real handy in my relationship with my wife. Now, when I speak about that, I just barely brush over that because I'm not one of these people. I'll never do, not in Alcoholics Anonymous or Al-Anon or any other setting, a workshop on traditions in my relationships or my marriage or whatever. I do use them in that, but I don't do that because I don't ever want to confuse a newcomer to believe that these 12 traditions were written for my stinking relationships. That's not what they were written for. As I shared last year I got through the first 4 for traditions, and I tickled tradition 5 a little bit, and that's where I'm going to really pour it on tonight, is into that. But these traditions, as I found out, were their meaning to the group was the same thing as the meaning of the 12 steps were to me. As the 12 steps assured my survival, if I followed what the principles in those 12 steps, these 12 traditions will assure the survival of the groups and of AA as a whole if we follow them. The traditions for me and my life today have and have been for some time now are just as important as the recovery program, as the service. I've, you know, that circle and triangle, and I heard some folks mention that today talking in one of the workshops. You know, we don't get to see it in the book anymore, but if you get a nice book cover like I got my own built-in one, circle and triangle, and you know, it's a round circle, and it's an equal-sided triangle, an equilateral triangle. And that was the way I was taught, that was to have balance in this program. Because without recovery, there is no unity. And unity is what the 12 traditions are about. Without unity, there's no service. And without service, we'll lose Alcoholics Anonymous. It's not by accident there's a circle around that triangle, because each one leads to the next, and it comes around full circle. We've got to keep that thing going. And that's what I try to do today. I was very fortunate. I landed at a group. It was 23 years old. They were already doing it right. Matter of fact, I hated them first couple of years I was there. They were doing it way too right for me. They barked at me a lot, first about the steps, and finally I took the 12 steps, and then they started barking at me about traditions. You know, they're always barking about something, it seemed like, and I wasn't real crazy about them. Today, I am so grateful. You know, I know it's luck of the draw, but that's where I ended up. People have asked me, you know, I've been the same only home group I've ever had, almost 22 years now. And they asked me, you know, how would I like to be remembered at my group? And I said, you know what, when I got there, they had their act together. When I'm gone, if all people say about me is, well, he was here however many years, and he didn't screw it up, that'd be the greatest compliment anybody could pay me. And I work real hard to do that today, as does my wife. My wife's a member of the group as well. As I said, the traditions are to the groups and AA as a whole what the 12 steps are to the individual. And they call for unity. And I went through a little brief history last year when I talked about it. I won't go through it in depth other than to say that, you know, that the groups, right after the favorable articles to Alcoholics Anonymous in the early 40s, Saturday Evening Post, Cleveland Plain Dealer, and all of those, AA went through a phenomenal growth period. We were on everybody's radar all of a sudden and started growing fast. And they didn't have mass communication back then. Groups were popping up all over the place. All they had was the big book at the time, which was great for recovery, you know, for the recovery part. But they began to get all sorts of ideas and ways of doing things. And there wasn't, as I said, a whole lot of good communication going on. And groups began to get into a lot of trouble. They didn't mean to get into trouble. So most of the things they did were well-meaning, well-intentioned, seemed like a good idea at the time. You know, my whole life was based on seemed like a good idea at the time. That's what I'm doing in here now. People began to turn to Bill and said, you know, we've got problems here. What do we do? And a lot of folks don't realize just what a dangerous period that was there in the early to mid-40s. We were kind of walking on thin ice during that period. AA could have joined the ash heap of history right along with the Washingtonians or the Oxford group, or, you know, some of the others that have tried in the past. We could have gone right down that path if something hadn't have been done. And these traditions, I truly believe, were the lifesaver that held us together. And historically, as some of you know, folks didn't really receive them real well right at first when Bill started formulating what he called the 12 points to ensure our survival, 12 points to ensure our future, and eventually settled on the 12 traditions. If you've never read the book, there's a book called The Language of the Heart. These are all of Bill Wilson's writings to the grapevine. This is one of the best history books you will ever read on how the traditions came together. 12 and 12, of course, has the traditions in them as they were presented in 1953, but the history of them, Bill wrote all of this down in Articles to the Grapevine, and you can see the evolution of this and how they came about. What you'll find in that book is you'll find that the traditions that were adopted were not what you see up there on the window shade at your group. And I've said this once, and I'll say it again. If all you ever learn about those traditions is what's written on that window shade, you will never know what those traditions mean. It's much like buying a novel, reading the table of contents, and throwing it away and saying, that was a good book. I really enjoyed that, you know, because you're going to miss out what's in there. The long version is what was adopted. That was what was originally adopted. They shortened it up later. And, of course, the essays that you find in Language of the Heart, you'll find in the 12 and 12, all of the and AA Comes of Age. They're all so important to read because they help you understand not only what the tradition truly says, but why we even have the tradition. And that's important to know. These were not just, you know, they weren't just sitting around looking up there to, you know, 12 steps on the wall going, you know what? The decor in the room would look so much better if we could come up with 12 of something over here to balance it out, you know. I mean, these traditions were born out of bitter experiences. And in Tradition 1, it says our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. They come right out of the chute telling you that, you know, our future depends on this. We absolutely have to do this. And it says it depends on AA unity, not just unity, but AA unity. You can have unity inside your group and it not necessarily be AA unity. Everybody can agree to be a total screw-up, in other words, you know, that's unity, but it's not AA unity. And the remaining 11 traditions tell me exactly how to accomplish it. I don't have to reinvent the wheel. The track is already laid out for me. Tradition 2 tells me who's in charge and it assures me that it's not me or it's not you either, so there. But it's all of us. It's all of us in our collective group conscious. You know, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscious. And this tradition is one of the most absurdive ones of all. And I'm one of these people, and I don't mean to offend anybody when I say stuff. Honest to God, I don't. But I'm a firm believer in what this stuff says, and I believe tradition, too, is it's very clear that if a group is not practicing a group conscious, they are not truly a group, period. And I'm sure that applies to Al-Anon just as well, since you all use our traditions, too. Because this tradition says, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscious. It doesn't say ought to, should, let's form a committee and think about it. It's very definitive. And if I'm not practicing the group conscious in the group, I'm really not practicing. I really don't have a group. The other thing it says in that tradition is it says, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscious. You know what? He may not. If my selfishness, self-centeredness, if our egos get in the way, God gets out of the way and lets us screw up all we want. And then the second half of that tradition reminds us that we do have leaders in AA, but our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Tradition 3 is the requirement for membership, all one of them. But once again, now this is probably one of the most deceptive traditions in the whole book, because if all you do is read the short version of Tradition 3, you'll never know what Tradition 3 says. Because in Tradition 3, the long version, this is the place where for the first time an AA group, what an AA group is, was defined. In long version, Tradition 3. Short version says the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking, and that's absolutely true. That's our membership requirement. But the long version defines what a home group is, and it says any two or three alcoholics, gathered together for sobriety may call themselves an AA group, provided that as a group they have no other affiliation. It's very definitive as to what an AA group is. Tradition 4 tells me, guarantees us autonomy for the freedom to run our own business, our own affairs, to seat our own affairs as a group. One of the greatest gifts, I love this tradition, but is the ultimate double-edged sword, because with that gift that they give us for autonomy comes the other way, it cuts the other way where it gets abused a lot. I've heard people use this, and my friend Jim T., who's a past delegate from 1995, says that this is the tradition they always invoke right before they're getting ready to break another tradition. Well, we're autonomous. We can do this. Here's the way that I was taught to look at this. And if you look at it this way, it makes a lot of sense. The traditions are spiritual principles, just like the 12 steps. And if these are spiritual principles, I cannot comprehend a spiritual principle that could be used to break another spiritual principle. And that's what folks do when they misuse autonomy. They're using one tradition to break another tradition. Bill Wilson writes a lot of essays about that. Some of them are in that real dry book called The Service Manual. But he refers a lot to that, about the misuse of using one tradition to break another one, and warns us against that sort of thing. So, yes, we have the autonomy, but we should all times be aware of how we are affecting other groups or AA as a whole, because that's what it says. Each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. Fourth tradition is a lot like the fourth step. It's kind of like, except at the group level. It asks us at all times to be aware of what we're doing in Alcoholics Anonymous and make sure that what we're doing is for the benefit of AA as a whole and that we're not harming any other group or AA as a whole. And then Tradition 5, where I got into last year, said this is the, I call it the centerpiece on the table, because this tradition right here is the one that tells me what we're in business for in Alcoholics Anonymous. It tells you what you're in business for in the program of Al-Anon. It's very clear that we have but one primary purpose. It says each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. You know, the funny thing is, in the early days of Alcoholics Anonymous, this tradition, they didn't even really talk about it a whole lot. It was so assumptive that it was like, what else would you be in here for? I mean, alcoholism was, there was such a stigma attached to it that people were hiding, you know, they were afraid to come in here anyway a lot of time. And, you know, so there was not a lot of concern about singleness of purpose. In 1955, when the foreword to the second edition, or when the second edition was printed, and you can read in the foreword to the second edition where the summary of the 12 traditions were put, and it's like on the fourth page of the foreword, you'll see a big fat paragraph in the middle of the page that has a summary of the traditions, and Bill summarizes all of them, and nowhere in there does he even mention Tradition 5. And you know, as I said, it was kind of like so assumptive, like what else would we be here for? Just 8 short years later, Bill had to put together one of the strongest essays that he ever wrote. It's called Problems Other Than Alcohol. In that short period of time, from 55 to 63, a lot of things started happening in AA. There's a speaker, as a matter of fact, I noticed that Greg has the tape back there. It's Ray O'Keefe. Some of y'all have probably heard his talks, and he talks a lot about that from the historical perspective and how the drugs came onto the scene, particularly the tranquilizers and things like that. And I mean, they just kind of were an overnight sensation, and before you knew it, AA started filling up with all sorts of folks that weren't alcoholics. And they started playing games with this tradition. Each group has but one primary purpose. Well, maybe we got a secondary purpose or a couple of third purposes, you know, maybe this, maybe that. To carry its message. Well, what's its message? Well, maybe its message is whatever the group thinks its message is. I've heard this in workshops and talks, and I got to tell you, there's absolutely nothing in the literature that backs either one of those two things up. Matter of fact, Bill, like I said, in 63, wrote this essay, Problems Other Than Alcohol. You can find it in the book Language of the Heart. There's an AA pamphlet called Problems Other Than Alcohol. As a matter of fact, there's a brand new one. It just came out. The AA pamphlet, Problems Other Than Alcohol. It used to be this little blue and white one. Now they got a full-size one that has the full article in it, which is pretty nice. But inside that article came one of the strongest, most powerful lines he ever wrote that tied the fifth tradition up in a real solid sort of way, where he wrote, sobriety, freedom from alcohol, through the teaching and the practice of the 12 steps is the sole purpose of an AA group. Now, I tell you, you might be like me. I can play word games. I've looked at that one every angle possible, and I can't get around that sole purpose. There just ain't no wiggle room in there, folks. I mean, it just absolutely nails it down. We've got one purpose in there and nothing else. And I'm very grateful that Bill took the time to do that. You know, the message, what is the message? Well, it's the program of recovery. You know, it's how we had that spiritual awakening. We were given the power to help others and to practice these principles in all our affairs and all the other stuff that goes along with it. And it is our message, its message, the message of AA. You know, it's very clear on what message we're talking about. And by doing that, it keeps us from being sidetracked by outside issues. The very presentation of our program depends on this, and it's very important for newcomers to know what AA is and what it's not. And we even got, well, it's not really a pamphlet, but it's a double-sided sheet of paper, and it says that on there, what AA does, what it does not do, on side one and side two. I use that one a lot in the public work that we do in AA with the Cooperation Professional Community and PI. That's where we go out and try to explain us to normal people, and that's a hoot if you've never tried that one. It's interesting. But, you know, in the carrying the message, there's a lot of subtle things, and I didn't really realize this early on. You know, I knew what I'd been through the steps. I knew what our message was. I was already working with others. But my sponsor began to expound on that carrying the message. He said sometimes what we wrap that message in can do a lot of harm. The message, the integrity of the message can be okay. You know, what I'm saying, it can be okay. But how I'm wrapping that message, how I'm packaging that message, can be very, very dangerous. One of the things is my sponsor taught me, and this is my experience. When I get up behind the podium, I'm to be presentable at all times. I don't use foul language behind the podium, and it's not because, and I generally don't use them even in the regular meetings. It's not because I don't know the words. I know them real well. You just ask my sponsees. Ask my wife. She's heard them a few times, too. I'm not a goody two-shoes. I just found that it is the ultimate oxymoron to stand up here and talk to you about a spiritual program of recovery while I'm dropping the F-bomb every third word. It makes absolutely no sense to me whatsoever. Each and every one of these traditions, as I've gone through them, you know, in the early days, they were like rules to me. And I shared some stories with you last year on that where I would learn a tradition and I'd go, okay, it says this. Okay, fine, I'll do that. But one by one, as the years went by, as I stayed grounded in this program, I had events happen in my life, at my groups. I saw things happen in Alcoholics Anonymous where suddenly these traditions came alive. I had those aha moments, those eureka moments, whatever you want to call them, where suddenly I got it. I understood exactly why they did it. One of my all-time classics on this tradition was I was in a meeting one night at my group. I was about a year and a half sober. My sponsor, I love it. First time I ever spoke at my group, I was 6 months sober. My sponsor found out about it. I didn't even tell him. I didn't even ask him if it was okay. I just agreed to it. He said, I see you're on the schedule. Yes, sir. He said, well, I just want to let you know. He said, I've heard you talk around here sometimes. And he said, if you get up behind that podium and you start talking the way I've heard you talk, he proceeded to tell me what he was going to do to me. And he was cussing me out while he was telling me not to cuss behind the podium. I go figure that one. I mean, he said, I will drag your blankety blank down and kick your blankety blank all the way out the door right in front of every blankety blank person. Okay. I didn't cuss anywhere for the next year. I was so scared. But anyway, I'm sitting in this meeting. I'm a year and a half sober. We're pretty tight about things, and we ask our speakers to, you know, keep singleness purpose and refrain from using profanity. One night, a renegade got in there, and this guy was behind the podium, and oh my God, I mean, as sick as I was at a year and a half sober, even I was disgusted by this guy. It was F this, you know, and all this other, one thing after another, and I was like, God, this is pitiful. Some little old lady had walked in. She was about 10 minutes late. She walked in about 10 minutes late. She comes walking in with her little purse and her little hat. She looked like your stereotypical little church lady. She didn't look like she belonged in there with the rest of us. And as it turned out, after the meeting, she didn't. She wasn't one of us. She was there because she was absolutely in desperation. She had a son who was dying from this disease, you know, and she had talked to her minister, and he had told her about Alcoholics Anonymous. Ironically, that's how I went to my first meeting. My mother called her priest and told her all about me and got me into my first AA meeting. But anyway, this lady's in there, and after the meeting's over with, the women at our group do what they do. They go after them, find out what's up. You know, the stranger's in there. Let's see what they need. And they find out this woman's situation. She tells them the story about her son and how desperate she was and on, and how her minister had told her about this. And the ladies did what they were supposed to do. They said, you know, we'll introduce you to the men here. I don't know what we can do. He's got to want, you know. I mean, they're telling them everything they need to tell them. But we'll be here to help you. And then this lady said these words, and I didn't hear her say them. This was repeated at the next group conscious meeting where all hell broke loose. What happened next was this lady said, you know what, I've been sitting here in this meeting, and my minister did tell me to come here that y'all could help. But she said, you know, what I just sat through for this last hour, I don't know if I want my son to come to a place like this. And it was all because of what that speaker was up there saying at that moment. You know, as I said, I was a newcomer, and even I was disgusted by this guy. It was so pathetic. I didn't hear Alcoholics Anonymous. I just heard some guy acting like a bozo up there, you know, using profanity. But see, for 1 hour, that became Alcoholics Anonymous to that one person. You never know when you're going to be an example of that big book. I was taught that from day one, and I got to see that happen right then and there that day, and suddenly that made sense to me. All that stuff that my sponsor and those other old farts at the group were barking at me about all the time, one more thing just came off the board. I get it now. And I was very grateful for that. The other thing is, in the message, am I talking AA or am I talking BB? Does everybody know what BB is? Okay. Well, if you don't, there's AA and there's everything else. And I just call everything else BB. So if you hear me refer to BB, it's whatever ain't AA. And okay? So Am I talking AA or BB? And y'all know what I'm talking about. You go into a meeting, you hear snorting, smoking, popping, poking, my inner child, how to find my place in the cosmos, what my therapist told me, what they said on Dr. Phil today, you know, my dog peed on the rug and I want to slit my throat. Or you go to one of those meetings. I'm sure you've never been to one of these. You've never been to one of these meetings. Starts off, the worst thing you could ever say. Has anybody got a topic? Oh, you're going to get a topic if you do. If you don't come in there prepared for the meeting, you're going to get it. Anybody got a topic? Yeah, I got a topic. I had a bad day. And here they go, telling you about their bad day. Well, we all know in Alcoholics Anonymous, the first liar doesn't stand a chance. You know, if the first guy robbed a bank, the next guy robbed two banks, by the end of the meeting, they got a guy that's robbed Fort Knox. You know, I mean, it just, you can't, yeah, if you go first, you're screwed. And so, you know, he had a bad day. And here comes the next guy. His day was even worse. Let me tell you about my day. And oh, God, it goes around and around and around. And finally, at the end of the meeting, that last one is so pitiful. Man, they're taking up a collection for him. And then they find out they got a newcomer in the room, and they all go running up to him, and they say, if you want what we have, you know. And I mean, you know, what kind of message are we carrying? What kind of message are we carrying in alcoholism? That is one of the things that's so important. You know, we have one primary purpose, but at least if we're focusing on that, let's at least make sure the message we're carrying is our message. The disease of alcoholism and how we recover from it. It's just that simple. The teaching and the practice of the 12 steps, the sole purpose of an AA group. You know, in carrying that message, I'm to avoid expert opinions at all time. You know, I'm not an expert on medical. I'm not an expert on religious, financial advice, even though I work in that business. Relationships, you know, I've been divorced 3 times for crying out loud. I'm not exactly your go-to guy for that. People have asked my wife and I to do, they said, will y'all do a workshop on relationships? We get the biggest kick ever. We've never done one, by the way. We always say, sorry, we don't, that's not AA. But I tell them, I say, but I'll be nice. I'll give you my relationship workshop right here and now. I'm well-sponsored. She's well-sponsored. Our sponsors keep us grounded in the program. They help. They teach us to work with other alcoholics, to give back, to be of service to Alcoholics Anonymous. And when we meet back in the middle, our lives are pretty darn good after that because we stay grounded in AA. That's my workshop on relationships. That's all I know. That's it. If you're looking for an Oprah moment out of me, you ain't going to get it. Because left to my own devices, I will screw it up every stinking time. And that's the truth. But anyway, I got to avoid all of these expert opinions. You know, I mean, I've had some opinions on, you know, like, and we all know what we're talking about. People come in medicated that don't need to be medicated, but I can't say anything about that. I got to be very careful with that. I know that most of the cases, though, that I'm right about that. But you know what? I can be right 100 times, and all I got to do is be wrong once, and I can kill somebody. And that's why it's so dadgum dangerous. So dangerous to do that. And like I said, I'm not a person who needs to be doing that anyway. And part of our message says that I am responsible. When anyone anywhere reaches out for help, I want the hand of AA always to be there. And for that, I'm responsible. One of the ways to keep the integrity of the message intact is to stick with our literature, Alcoholics Anonymous's literature at all times. In the meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not against outside literature. I read a lot of it myself, but I will not bring it into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't care how good it is. It doesn't matter. Because the moment I bring mine in, next week somebody else is going to want to bring theirs in. Then the week after that, somebody wants to bring theirs in. And pretty soon we got a table full of junk up here that is not Alcoholics Anonymous. And we've been, once again, diverted from our primary purpose, you know. In AA, we're not therapists, we're not doctors, we're not gurus, we don't deal with your issues or help you set boundaries there, Gunther, as he said last night. I love that line he had last night. When I hear people say that, it's like hearing scratching fingernails on a chalkboard. I'm grateful that I had a sponsor that didn't give a hoot and heck about my feelings. He told me my feelings were the most useless barometer of reality of anything going on in my head. And if I was to work these 12 steps, these feelings will change. And I'm grateful that he gave me that kind of message. Another message that I've seen, and I'm sure none of y'all have ever experienced this, but I've seen people show up on birthday night with lots of years of sobriety, telling you how grateful they are to Alcoholics Anonymous. The next time you see that person is a year later at the birthday night again, telling you how grateful they are. I don't see that anymore at our group. We pretty well ran them off. They don't fit well in our group. You know, I don't know how, I heard somebody else say this earlier, you know, gratitude's an action word to me. You know, my sponsor banned me. As a matter of fact, I used to say it so much that he banned me from saying gratitude, how grateful I was more than one time in any given meeting. He said, if I hear you say I'm grateful more than once, you and I are going to, well, we're going to have that cuss out stuff out in the parking lot one more time. Another thing my sponsor did for me, and I'll move on to the next tradition, that was so powerful, and you know, it's really weird. They do these things and they stick with you. Stuff just doesn't go away. I was yakking in a meeting one time, and I was telling some really rough jokes to some buddies, and I was a little bit loud, meeting before the meeting, and I was a little bit loud, and I really had no business talking like that. You know, I mean, we could have gone somewhere quiet and done that, but my sponsor heard it and, you know, felt the big hand on the shoulder, and out the door we went. And I got, you know, y'all know what a donkey barbecue is? That's where a lot of ass gets chewed, and that's what happened. We went to another one of those donkey barbecues, and I'm the ones getting chewed, believe me. But you know, he was a good sponsor. He knew the art of sponsorship, and he knew how to. He gave me the moral is this story, and I'd always appreciated him for that. And one of the things he told me, he said, "Son, here's what I want you to do." He said, "Every so often, when you're in the meeting, fellowship before the meeting and after the meeting," he said, "I want you to just kind of take a step back, kind of detach yourself from everything going on around you. Take a step back, look around the room, and ask yourself, you know, look at what you're seeing and ask yourself, if I'm a newcomer walking into Alcoholics Anonymous for the first time, what am I seeing and is it attractive?" And I thought, well, that sounds like another one of his dumb plans, you know, but I started doing it. I was like, I don't know, not even quite 2 years sober. You know, I'm coming up on 22 years, and I still do that today. I do it in all sorts of settings and environments today. It's just a habit. And I'm happy to say a lot of times what I see is good, but other times I'm like, oh, my God, you know, this is scary. If I was a newcomer, home, this would be terrible. You know, and one last thing, and this kind of sums it all up. Bill W. wrote in a letter in 1942, he said, "Our chief responsibility to the newcomer is an adequate presentation of the program. If he does nothing or argues, we do nothing but maintain our own sobriety. If he starts to move ahead, even a little, with an open mind, we then break our necks to help him in every way we can." And, you know, that is truly the essence of what we do in here. And that is, you know, in this fifth tradition, and all of the traditions for that matter, one of my favorite lines that I heard was a delegate from New Mexico was given a talk one time, and she said something that really stuck with me for a long time. She said, "In order for me to be a true member of Alcoholics Anonymous, I got to know what it is I'm a member of." And this is what I've learned through learning all three legacies in Alcoholics Anonymous, because all three of these legacies bring in focus the entire picture of what we are. I truly today understand what it is I'm a member of in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not out on the fringe with just a little bit of information here, a little bit there. It's all come together. It's not to say I've learned everything there is. I find stuff, new stuff all the time. But I understand what it is I'm a member of today, and I don't have a problem with that singleness of purpose. Tradition 6 says, "An AA group I'll never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose." Now, as I said, these traditions have long versions, and boy, this tradition has a real long, long version to it, and I'm not even going to come close to getting into all of it. But the roots of this tradition, I talked about it last year when I was giving the opening talk about the trouble we got into, was in those early days, you know, when our explosive growth began to happen. Bill went up there and opened that foundation office, and folks started getting bright ideas. You know, here we go. I don't suffer from the obsession to drink today, but I do suffer from another problem. It's called bright ideas. When I first came in, I was a bright idea a minute. I've toned that down a little bit, but I can still get it. And that's something drunks are real good at. And we had a lot of those in those early days. You know, we were running hot there for a while. We were growing fast. Everybody was all flush with that little spiritual enema, and just everything was cooking, man. And we were feeling good about this fellowship that was around us. We were feeling so good, we were coming up with bright ideas on what we could do with it. You know, we need to expand this into the dark regions of drug addiction. We need to move into the criminals and that sort of thing. We need to go to the legislatures and rewrite the laws of the land. After all, alcoholics aren't bad people. They're just sick people. We need to have our own hospitals. They treat us bad in these regular hospitals. Maybe it's because we didn't pay our bills. I don't know. But, you know, we need to just build our own hospitals. We need alcoholic education and research centers. You know, people go out and give talks and education on what alcoholism is. These were all well-intentioned things, all of these things. They meant well when they came up with it. But what we found out real quickly was these things bogged us down. And most importantly, they diverted us from our primary purpose. They bogged us down, and they cost a lot of money, which will be the next tradition I'll be talking about in a few minutes. You know, and as I said, these things took us away from what we were there for, what our single purpose was. And one of the things, and I talk a lot about this, is, you know, folks, sometimes I talk about folks profiting off of AA. And some people think I'm talking about finances, but this tradition says says there are three ways I can that I can be profiting off of AA: money, property, and prestige. Those are the three areas that we can get a little bit too much of in this. It tells me in the long version of tradition six, kind of sums it all up. And the last two sentences of the long version of tradition six really sums up what the essence of the whole thing says. When it says, while an AA group may cooperate with anyone, which is what we're doing this weekend, us and Al-Anon, we cooperate. We're not affiliated, but we do cooperate. While an AA group may cooperate with anyone, such cooperation ought never go as far as affiliation or endorsement, actual or implied. Actual or implied. Can you take a wild guess as to which one that bites us in the butt the most? It's that implied, folks. It gets me every now and then. I've caught myself several times saying things. I didn't mean to say it. It sounded like the right thing to say at the moment, but suddenly I realized I just implied that AA was something that it wasn't. As I said earlier, I've been very active in general service. One of the things I love to do is CPC work. It's as I said, it's a little bit different from some of the others. I mean, I do corrections and treatment work as well, but I love to go talk about AA to, you know, doctors, lawyers, judges, medical folks, ministers, you know, all the different things. I was speaking at a Lions Club one time, and I was talking to them about it. And some guy came up to me after the meeting, and he said, I was reading an article one time, and it said that they believe that the disease of alcoholism is hereditary, genetic, if you will. And I looked at him, I said, you know, a lot of us in AA agree with that. Now, I can say that in here with you guys, with the fellow AAs, that's not a big deal. But no sooner than those words got out of my mouth, I suddenly realized what I just said. That man was not a member of AA, didn't know squat about AA. And just by me saying many of us in AA agree with that, I just implied that we even had a position on it one way or the other, which is really a 10th tradition issue. You'll notice these traditions really overlap a lot. You know what? I've said this before. The cool thing about the traditions is every time you break one of them, you automatically break number one with it, too. If you break tradition five, you break number one. You break tradition three, you break number one. Matter of fact, if you swing that bat just right, you can take out four, five, six of these traditions in one good swing, because they are all intermeshed with one another. And that implied affiliation is the one that will bite us the most, because it can hit us in so many subtle ways, so many subtle ways. I get a little soapboxy about this sometimes, because I was one of those that I came in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was hospitalized. I was full-blown DTs, 35 years old, and as I said earlier, I was, you know, single parent with three daughters, and you know, my life was in the toilet. And I started going to the AA meetings. For almost 3 months, I was in meetings, and I sat in the worst meetings I could possibly be sitting in, because I was not hearing the disease of alcoholism, how we recover from it. I heard all that other stuff I was telling, the BB stuff I was telling you about a while ago. I was listening to that nutty, whacked-out stuff, and after about 2 months of that, as sick as I was, I thought, these people are freaking nuts. I don't belong here. Perhaps I overreacted, you know, never mind I was in the hospital, you know, 2 months earlier with, you know, full-blown DTs and near cardiac arrest, you know, maybe I overreacted. And I went back out one more time, because I heard things in that meeting that made me believe that AA was something other than what it really was. I was hearing implied affiliation all over the place. We had the drug addicts. We had Al-Anons that had no business being in there talking in our meetings. We had general nutcases in there. You know, that I don't know what they were doing there. They'd sit around drool a lot, except when they talked. And I'm hearing all this crazy, whacked out stuff, and I'm thinking this is AA, and this is that implied affiliation that we talk about. And I went back out, and I lasted 4 days out there before I came crawling back in on my hands and knees. Now, I got to tell you, I had my faults in this, in that I didn't have a sponsor. I wasn't reading the big book. I was feeling better than I felt since I could remember, and I didn't see what the rush was, you know, and I was just going to do things my way. I came crawling back in on my hands and knees on December 7th of 88, and I got a sponsor. And the first thing he did was ban me from those meetings, and he moved me. He said, you'll be in the 8 o'clock meeting with the grown-ups where you will hear Alcoholics Anonymous and how we work these steps. I hated those grown-ups right at first, but I got to tell you, he was absolutely right. And this alcoholic has never questioned his alcoholism ever again. I knew the delusion that I was like other people or presently maybe was smashed right then and there. Had no lurking notion, no reservation. All that stuff it says in the chapter more about alcoholism had happened to me. I didn't know it until years later, or months later, I went back and read that, and I thought, that's what happened. Because I heard that. All of that other stuff got out of there, you know, and we didn't have it anymore, and so I didn't have to hear it. And I got to hear this. Back to Tradition 6, though, you know, as I said, in the early days, our foundation was chartered to do all sorts of things, and the groups were playing monkey see, monkey do. They were getting into all sorts of problems, and we found out in a hurry that we had to get out of this stuff. We had to remove the AA name from everything, all outside stuff, no matter what. When if we go into hospitals, we have meetings in a hospital, we can't take the name of the hospital. If we're meeting in a church, you can't call yourself the First Baptist Church of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I mean, you can't take anything that will imply affiliation to anything. We've got to stay clear of. You know, we found it necessary to even remove the AA name from, clubhouses, 12-step or halfway houses. We found that we couldn't affiliate with anything under any circumstances, no matter how good the cause. The moment that we lent the AA name to anything, we got into trouble. And we can't be all things to all people. Alcoholics Anonymous gladly gives its 12 steps to anybody that wants to use it. And there's over 200 organizations today that use it, you know, and we have no problem with that. We just don't endorse or affiliate with them under any circumstances. You know, there's a lot of alcoholics that actually in the early days and today as well, folks that work in the treatment industry or other medical fields. And in the old days in AA, they thought that was heresy. But as we come to find out, folks can go work in anything they want to. They just got to know how to do it right. And my old grand sponsor, David A., always referred to them as the two hatters. They got to know how to, they can wear two hats, but they can only wear them one at a time. You know, I've met a lot of people who work in that industry and you know, in the medical field, and they do it very well. When they're in there, they're not a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. They're doing what they do for a living. When they're in Alcoholics Anonymous, boy, we got one that's a real close friend of mine there in the Mid-Cities area in Dallas-Fort Worth. God help you if you go in there and start talking to her about psychobabble stuff in an AA meeting. But, you know, there again, in the treatment facility, she keeps her anonymity in there. She'll break her anonymity only in certain situations. My wife, she was my wife's counselor when my wife went through there in 1993. And my wife was one of the ones that she thought well enough of that it was safe to break some anonymity, and she referred her to her first home group and everything else. You know, alcoholics can work in any related field as long as they don't misuse the AA name or as anything. You know, we don't attach our name to anything, no matter what we do. You know, once we saw that affiliation with anyone was harmful, we realized that we really didn't need a lot of money. That was one of the really cool benefits of this thing. You know, all these great ideas, these grandiose ideas that we were looking to get into, were going to put us into a lot of financial situation. AA was going to need a whole lot of money. And fortunately, we got away from that, and that saved us from probably what was going to be one of the biggest problems in all, and that's money, which leads me to Tradition 7, which says every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. And what an awesome history with this one, you know. It's like so many things in AA. We had those moments, those little snapshots in time that happened in Alcoholics Anonymous where we could have gone either way, so where something happened that we could have gone this way or that way, and if we'd have gone the wrong way, we may not, none of us would be here sitting here today. And this is one that really, I think, they had several opportunities to go the wrong way on this one, and fortunately, each and every time, we managed to go the right way. You know, early on, there were cases where people tried to will large sums of money to Alcoholics Anonymous, people who were not AA members. In the early days, the foundation office was struggling. The groups weren't sending money to support it. And, you know, here comes this lady that had willed them $10,000. And I got to tell you, that caused one of the biggest fights imaginable in those early days because, you know, they needed that money bad. I mean, half that bunch in there, they thought, man, we need this. Let's do it. The other half, thank God, could see the future. They saw that, you know, once we go down this path, we can lose. You know, even before that, there was the famous Rockefeller dinner, you know, and all of you, a lot of y'all know the history behind that. You know, Bill and that bunch went in there and that thing, you know, dreaming in millions going into that meeting thinking, boy, AA's trouble's over. You know, here are all these multimillionaires. We're going to walk out, you know, with bags full of money. And what happened was that John D. Rockefeller had enough foresight. And it's amazing how non-alcoholics have helped us so much in the early days in AA, folks that were willing to stand with us. And that was probably one of the greatest ones. And it wasn't great to those people sitting in that meeting, in that banquet that night, because like I said, they thought they were going to get millions, and they just walked out with a few thousand. And just a few thousand to help pay for Bill and Bob, pay the mortgage on Bob's house and give Bill a little bit of money to, you know, to live on. Basically money so that they could live on, so that they could do Alcoholics Anonymous work. And that was it. Sometimes you'll hear people say the Rockefellers gave us money to help publish the big book. That's not true. We got a guy in our area, and I recommend this guy to y'all any time. His name's Arthur Sheehan. He is an archivist, area archivist. The guy is awesome. He's so good, the International is going to have him speaking. And if y'all are going to the International, I recommend you go hear his talks. And he does a presentation called Myths and Folklore in AA, and it's one of the funniest presentations you've ever seen. But he's got all these myths, these things that we hear in AA that a lot of us think were true, that we find out it never happened that way. You know, they are just that. They were myths that have been passed down. And that was one of them, that the Rockefellers gave us money to help with the big book. And no, that wasn't the case at all. We scammed even bigger on that one with those stock certificates, works publishing. That's a funny story. If you think we're a bunch of angels in AA, that our history's full of all of these angels and good guys, I got another story for you. It's amazing how all that came together. But anyway, back to self-support. You know, it warns us in the long version of self-support that there's two ways that we can get in trouble in AA. It's very simple. I mean, there's only two ways there's only two money types of money problems you can have in AA. Too much, not enough. Everything else, you know, if you can keep it right down the middle, everything's fine. But those are the two areas that cause us problems. It warns us in the long version about public solicitation of funds, you know, large gifts from any source, contributions with obligations attached to them. We stay away from all of that stuff. But then it turns around and says, then too, we view with much concern those AA treasuries which continue beyond prudent reserve to accumulate funds for no stated AA purpose. And it goes on to say, experience has often warned us that nothing can so surely destroy our spiritual heritage as futile disputes over property, money, and authority. And, you know, as I've moved through General Service and Alcoholics Anonymous, I went through the DCM thing. I was area treasurer. I was alternate delegate and then delegate to the 57th and 58th General Service Conference. And, you know, part of that is that, you know, my area has 530 groups, and I get to do, I do probably in the neighborhood of 30, 40 workshops a year, workshops, group inventories. And it's the same old stuff over and over and over again. And it's amazing what I see out there. Finances is probably one of the biggest areas that creates a whole lot of fear with people. Groups get in a little bit of trouble. Now, common sense would tell you, give you an example. You're in a building. You're paying rent. Your membership tails off. You know, you don't have as many people as you did. We've gone through that at my group. We've shrunk in a few years because a lot of people don't like hardcore big book studies and things like that. Imagine that. You know, and so a group shrinks. They got to do something. Well, common sense would tell you to move somewhere where you can afford it. Imagine that, you know. But, oh, no, not us, you know. We got to come up with these creative ideas. Tell you a story. Now, this is a David A. story. And one of the things that David always says is alcoholics don't lie, but they embellish. And I've heard this story. There is a measure of truth to it, and I'm not sure how much of a measure of truth there is to it, but it makes one hell of a story anyway. The group is real, and most of the events I'm about to tell you are real, but some of it, I don't know where the embellishment begins and the truth ends or whatever, but we'll try it anyway. A group out in West Texas, they got a resentment in a coffee pot. They moved over to they went and it was some high rollers, some deep pocket folks. They decided to go start their own group. They go over there, they rent this nice big meeting hall, nice tables and chairs, everything set up. They got deep pockets after all, and boy, everybody's going to come flocking with them, and they just know it. They'll teach that other well-established old group, you know. And off they go to get in the business of AA. Well, a month or two passes, and folks just aren't coming. At least not enough to support that lavish rent and everything else that they got there. And you know, they just keep, they're promoting it. They're trying to do everything they can. Nobody's coming. Not enough people are coming. And they're having to dip into their own pockets, and that's getting old fast. One day, one of the members comes up with a bright idea. What we need to do is we need to start playing bingo. You know, we'll go get us some bingo balls and cards. And, you know, after the Saturday night meeting, we'll just play bingo. We'll give cash prizes, and the group will take a cut out of the deal. And, you know, that'll help raise us some money. And, boy, were they right. I mean, they sent out flyers all over the place announcing, you know, come one, come all, get your cash prizes and all this stuff. And what was happening was these folks were coming out there to play. They were having the AA meeting. It was like an 8 o'clock meeting. Speakers up there talking, and around 8:30, people come stumbling in, jockeying for their bingo seats, you know. It's disrupting the meeting. It's causing some serious problems with their AA meeting. They have to have a group conscious about this, and what they decided to do was, well, the bingo's making lots of money. What we need to do is just cut out the AA meeting and just go straight to bingo on Saturday night. So goodbye AA meeting. Well, it's going so good, they decide, well, you know what, maybe we'll do this on Friday night, too. They had a meeting on Friday night. I probably don't have to tell you what happened to the Friday night meeting either, do I? And in the meantime, groups are writing letters. They're writing letters to the group, to their district, to the general service office, making calls, GSO. People are angry out there. They want this stuff to stop, and it's not stopping. And this is David's version of the story. He said, one night somebody dynamited the group and blew it halfway to New Mexico. Now, I'm sure there's some embellishment in there, but there was an explosion at the group from what I heard. It was obviously enough to bring a lot of attention to it, like FBI and people like that and the newspapers and stuff like that. And I'm thinking to myself as I heard David tell that story, I thought, what if you're a newcomer walking into Alcoholics Anonymous? Your day has come. This is when you've got to go to AA. You pick up the newspaper that morning, you read AA group blown up, you know. I mean, gee, I can't wait to get there. Count me in, you know. And I've heard other stories like that. I've heard, you know, gambling raids on groups. You know, groups decide to, you know, get into poker games. And I know of one in Dallas. I know one of in East Texas, you know, where, it's crazy. But once again, it gets in the newspaper when this happens, you know. And lo and behold, what kind of message does that send out about Alcoholics Anonymous? What does that say for us when that sort of thing happens? You know, in the a lot of things, and I don't want to get into a whole lot of this, but, you know, our self-support for our general services, our self-support for our literature and things like that, you know, that we reached a point in the late 70s and early 80s where almost half of the literature was being bought by outside entities. It's still a real high percentage today. You know, one of the things behind the principle behind this tradition is that what it says in the 12 and 12, he who pays the piper calls the tune. Folks, if we want to keep control of AA and if Al-Anon wants to keep control of Al-Anon, we've got to be fully self-supporting because sooner or later, if we take outside money, somebody's going to tell us how to run Alcoholics Anonymous, and we truly don't ever want to be put into that position. You know, once again, a lot of humility and a little common sense go a long way, and if we just keep that, we'll be fine. And then last of all, and I'm going to be real brief with this one, is Tradition 8, because it is a really, 8 and 9 are real snoozers if you're not real careful with them, but they are important. Don't get me wrong. All of them are important. Tradition 8, just like Tradition 9, are the ones that seem like they say one thing and then turn right around and contradict themselves with the second half of it. Tradition 8 says Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Non-professional. Employee special workers. And, well, that sounds like you just contradicted yourself. Well, that's not the case at all. When it says Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, it simply means that I was freely given this program, and I am to freely give it back. I don't charge for my 12-step work. God knows I've wanted to. If you'd see some of the boneheads I've sponsored, you would understand why. I've got two guys that I should be charging $50 a month just for sheer aggravation fee, if nothing else. However, all I have to do is remember back to what I was like with my sponsor, and I don't know, maybe what I'm still like today. He's sitting back there looking at me real serious, and maybe I'm going to get an aggravation fee when I leave here. I don't know. But, you know, what it's talking about in that first part is that I was freely given this, and under no circumstances am I to charge to give it back. We laugh about this, but here up in my area, Northeast Texas area, we actually had a group that was charging $50 a person to do their fifth step. Serious. We had a great talk with that bunch. It was a little hard because they didn't speak English, but it was interesting. They really were charging $50 a person to do a fifth step. But it does go on the second half and say our service centers may employ special workers. Well, what does that mean? Well, anybody that's familiar with a central office, there's your example of that right there. That was the first place that we actually experienced that in Alcoholics Anonymous. When we first started opening these inner groups or central offices, people were just screaming bloody murder that people would even consider paying these people for doing a job. My God, you know, these people should be doing this for free, for service work, that sort of thing. You know, and one of the things that I always love that saying, you know, if you pay peanuts, all you're going to get is a bunch of monkeys, and that's so true. You know, you can't force volunteers to do things, you know, but if somebody's on a salary, then you got a little some action that you can take. And AA decided at this point that we needed to pay our way in the world just like everyone else, and that if we need some kind of professional service, such as an inner group or a central office, General Service Office in New York is another example, that we pay these people and we pay them a fair price. We pay them exactly what we'd have to pay them on the fair market if they were not members of Alcoholics Anonymous. And some of the people that we hire as special workers are not members of Alcoholics Anonymous, so we definitely have to pay them fair market. We don't ask for special favors under any circumstances. A great example, then, you can relate this to your group. Your plumbing goes to heck in a handbasket in your group. You know, it's flooding all over the floor. Well, here's old Bob. He's a new guy. He just came in. He's a plumber. You know, hey, Bob, would you go fix that toilet for us, man? We don't know what to do. You're the only one that knows what he's doing. Bob goes and fixes the toilet, and you know, everybody's happy. You know, a couple of days later, Bob comes in there, and he plops an invoice down on the table for the group, and everybody in the group just, oh, my God, no, what are you doing? You know, we meant for you to do 12-step work. See, we never should guilt trip ever anyone. Bob had a right to bring that invoice in there if Bob wants to charge the group. We pay our way just like everyone else. If Bob wants to donate it as 12-step work, that's Bob's business. But we should never guilt trip anyone into doing service that we would otherwise have to pay for. And that's the essence of this tradition, what it's trying to say, that is that our AA program is never to be paid for, but we do pay our way in the world just like everyone else. You can read the story in town second tradition in the 12 and 12, which is really our first group conscious, what's recorded as our first group conscious, where Bill Wilson got that offer from Towns Hospital to go to work there as a lay therapist. He was all excited looking at all that money, and you know, he told Lois about it, and he went to the group with his guys that night. We didn't even have the traditions yet, and thank God these men had the foresight to see where this would take us, and they stood up to Bill. That had to have been hard. I mean, you're talking just about the first handful of drunks in Alcoholics Anonymous. And they're standing up to Bill, asking him to please don't do this, that this is the very thing that could take us down. If you professionalize this, that we could lose this whole thing. And it's amazing that, like I said, that they had that foresight. We didn't even have the traditions in place yet. Heck, we didn't even know what a group conscious was yet, and they were actually having one right then and there. And they asked him not to do it, and Bill turned that down, you know, because basically what he was going to do was be a professional lay therapist for Alcoholics Anonymous. And once again, that was another one of those snapshot moments in time that we could have gone either direction, and thank God we chose that way. As I said, this program was freely given to me, and I am to freely give it back at all times. Our 12-step work, carrying the AA message, is never to be paid for, but those who labor in service are worthy of their hire. And that's the end of step Tradition 8, and I want to thank you all so much for your attention tonight, and thank you for the opportunity to share it, and I hope to see you next year. Thanks.